Live from New York City, it's the Gary Noll Show. And now, your host, Gary Noll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noll, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. First, we're going to start with the latest on health and healing. Have the ability right now to prevent a lot of diseases, and if you are sick, especially with kidney disease, some new therapies that could help, all from good quality peer-reviewed journals. Then an in-depth, original investigative report entitled Wikipedia Embraces the Dark Side. Then my own personal commentary about the recent firing of Bonnie Faulkner and her program Guns and Butter from KPFA in Berkeley, California, one of the five Pacifica stations. And I've done some investigation on this. I've communicated with Bonnie. I invited her on the program today, but she chose not to come. I'll share my points of view on that. And, of course, we also have a couple audio clips, if time permits. I don't know how much we can fit, but we're going to squeeze everything we can in today into our program. We begin always with the latest on health and healing. And you can watch today's program, by the way, by going to Progressive Radio Network, Progressive Radio Network Facebook and watch us. There's a new study from John Moore University in the United Kingdom that shows that sitting for too long reduces the flow of blood to the brain. Quote, a team of researchers with Liverpool and John Moore University in the United Kingdom has found evidence of reduced blood flow to the brain in people who sit for longer periods of time. In their paper published in the Journal of Applied Physiology, the group outlines the experiments carried out. Now, what this means very simply is this. For a long period of years, probably up until about the 1990s, it was expected if you had a desk job that you stay at your desk. A lot of people wouldn't even go out for lunch, take a break. They would order in. And outside of giving themselves short coffee breaks, generally around 10, 10:30 in the afternoon as well, they were at their desk all day. That meant that realistically a person could be sitting for at least 7 hours a day. Now that's at their desk. That did not also include commuting time. So what if you're in a car commuting an hour, hour and a half each way each day, which is not that unrealistic. In fact, when I was last in San Francisco this past year, I had to go to Northern California up into the Napa Valley to do a lecture, all-day conference of continuing education for physicians. And I was doing nutrition and preventive medicine. It was about a two-hour trip. And the driver told me that he makes that every day, 6 days a week. And I said, but you're in a car then very early. He said, oh, no, I'm on the road at 4 o'clock in the morning to beat traffic to get there to pick up my affairs to take him back wherever I take him. I said, well, how many hours a day are you actually in a car? He said, about 12 hours. And how often do you get out of the car? He said, not often. Go to the restroom, but even people driving that much, truck drivers included, cab drivers included, will frequently go in a cup or one of these little containers they have now so they don't have to waste the time or try to find a parking space. That's extremely dangerous. Why? Just look at someone that flies a lot, like a pilot or a person that's traveling, flying. Your leg goes out, your thigh goes out, then at your knee, there's an abrupt change and the leg goes down. That crimps your arteries carrying blood from the heart and the veins returning the blood. And there are little valves in those veins. And when those valves weaken or in any way damaged, blood then does not normally flow back up, and you get a pooling of blood in the lower extremities. Now, if you look at your feet, if you sit a lot at a desk or at home, think of all the people working from home using, let's say, their office in their home. They're sitting most of the time. You'll see purple little veins around your ankles, on your feet. That's due to frequently poor circulation. Varicosities are frequently from poor circulation. But it gets worse. You can also end up with thrombosis and that could kill you. You don't want to sit for more than 2 hours at a time anywhere. So if you're on a plane, a train, then get up and walk. Do slight knee bends. Just balance yourself. I do it all the time when I fly. I'll put my hands, on my hips and just go down about 6-7 inches to what is called a partial squat, then back up again and go clear back up on your toes. That's also helping to exercise all those muscles. I do that for about 5 minutes. Then I can sit again. I would also suggest that cab drivers and truck drivers take more breaks, and this way you're not hurting the circulatory system. But remember, they're saying that sitting too long interferes with circulation to the brain. That's not good, because you need blood going into the brain, because blood carries the nutrients into the brain, those that will pass the blood-brain barrier, and oxygen, and brings out toxins. So if you're not getting good circulation in the brain, you're going to have inflammation in the brain. You're going to have toxins pile up. You're going to have oxidative stress. You're going to have more of the amyloid plaque that you don't want, that is a contributing factor to microstrokes and dementia and Alzheimer's. Something that simple, not getting up enough, can make the difference. And also, if you can, get yourself one of the desks that rises up. And not only do desks rise up, but the computer rises. You get your choice of both now. Or you can get a chair that rises, too. There's a new type of chair that takes you clear up. So this way, you can be up and down throughout the day. You want that pressure. You want the muscles to constrict and relax, constrict and relax. But also to make sure that you're not clotting, I suggest, to protect yourself from a heart attack or stroke, which could save lives, to take cayenne pepper, at high heat unit. Now, if you get it in capsule form, at least you know you're getting something that's standardized to about 40,000 heat units. That's not real high. Real high is 120,000, 150,000. That you don't want to take. But 40,000, you won't feel it, but it's helpful for your blood flow, nitric oxide. That's terrific, especially for men. And you need that. You need that nitric oxide. Gets the blood flowing and also spaces the red blood cells. You need vitamin D3, vitamin C, quercetin, NAD, and also coenzyme Q10 and L-carnitine, and the mineral calcium and magnesium. That helps the muscles constrict and then relax. And that contraction allows blood to go in and toxins out. Simple. So, got something new. Now, from Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston comes a new study that is published in the Lancet Public Health, showing that eating carbohydrates in moderation seems to be the optimum for health and longevity. And they looked at 15,400 people from the Atherosclerosis Risk of Community Study in the United States, and they looked at what they're eating, and they based it upon total carbohydrate. And then they looked at the larger one from a meta-analysis of 432,000 people from 20 countries, and they're saying that people eating the more animal-based proteins and fats from beef, lamb, pork, chicken, and cheese instead of carbohydrate are associated with a greater risk of death. Now, this is just one of numerous studies, hundreds of studies. I have all these studies. I had to collect in my research, my pre-documentary research for a new documentary that's done. As of today, it's 100% done. I'll be scheduling some from airing dates in the very near future. But I had to look at over 5,000 studies in the peer-reviewed literature on asking just a few questions. One question: how many studies exist showing that eating meat and the kind we eat, and you've seen the ads, I'm sure you've seen the ads, you know, we got the meat, Hardee's, right? And if you got bacon, then you want more bacon. And if you don't have bacon, you want bacon. You've seen the ads. And you've seen the ads like for the vodkas to make it seem exciting and interesting. And but all this contributes to disease. Not a single study shows that this helps you live a longer life, helps your heart, your arteries, your liver, your kidneys. To the contrary, all the studies show that eating a typical American diet with all the animal proteins and saturated fats contributes to heart disease, shorter lifespan by measurable years, and that a healthy plant-based diet lengthens your lifespan by multiple years. So here's the problem with this particular study, and this is why I disagree with it. I think it's just the opposite. They got it completely backwards. That's because their project design was flawed. Now, I've taught a course in research methodology, and that's why when I'm reading studies, I'm seeing who financed the study, who actually wrote the study, was a ghostwriter, and what's their methodology. Because when you read some studies, it really is confusing. What they say in the conclusion is not what the body of the study says. And that means that it's almost always a red flag. When it's too good to be true, it almost is corporate-sponsored. That means it's proprietary science. It means that the agenda is whatever it takes to pass this drug or appliance or medical procedure because it's going to profit the company, frequently tens of billions of dollars, let's get it in. And I just was reading a study this morning that shows that only about 1% of medical studies can be trusted because of bias. And that was in The Lancet. I'll share that study with you tomorrow. In any case, I believe that the amount of carbohydrates should be far more. Why? Because they didn't separate out refined carbohydrate from complex carbohydrate. So for someone like myself and many of you who are vegan, your carbohydrates are the principal part of your diet. Starchy vegetables, carbohydrate. Beans, legumes, grains, carbohydrate. Nuts and seeds, carbohydrate. Now, within that carbohydrate, you're getting your amino acids, the building blocks of protein. So if I have a handful of sunflower seeds or pumpkin seeds throughout the day, especially the sprouted ones, that's giving me complete protein. The same complete protein as someone else eating a hamburger. The difference is I've got fiber, B complex, and I've got phytonutrients, and I've got enzymes. They just have arachidonic acid, saturated fat, and very difficult digestion of that meat. They're both getting the same amount. One's healthy and providing life. The other is causing death and disease. So if they redid the study and said, all right, now the carbohydrate you're taking, you should only have 20% of your diet, they would then have said, is that a refined grain like white rice or a non-refined grain like brown rice? Is that a potato chip or an organic potato? And they didn't do that. So I would suggest that you need not moderate, you need major carbohydrate. Now, as a registered dietitian, as a clinical nutritionist, board certified, as a PhD in human nutrition and public health science, as a research fellow, as treating or helping the treatment of tens of thousands of people, I can tell you, I've never seen one improved on the standard American diet that's high in protein and high in fat. Low fat from natural sources, avocado and coconuts, and nuts and seeds, that's the fat you want in the diet, not animal fat, not fat from dairy. And the protein, you don't want it from animal proteins. That's what the actual science shows. And finally, if this is from University of Toronto, if you have low vitamin D3 levels and periodontitis condition, you can trigger the onset of type 2 diabetes. So one more reason to make sure that you keep your gums healthy with proper oral hygiene. And you already know how to do that. I've shared many times, but also make sure you get at least 1,000 units of vitamin D3 a day. And if you're out in the sun, you're getting that. You're getting about 20,000 units in the sun each day. And that's important. And by the way, one more study from Medical College of Georgia. It says men's greater oxidative stress burden could result in lower nitric oxide levels. This is published in Bioscience Reports, reveals the findings of the colleagues of a negative impact of higher oxidative stress levels on the ability to produce nitric oxide. Now, what does this mean in lay language? It means that when men are exercising, you're creating oxidative stress. That's bad. But you're also helping your circulation, your feel-good hormones, the endorphins, You're getting those dopamine hits, which are good. That's why we like to exercise. And you're strengthening your muscles. You're burning body fat. You're going to have a lower circumference of the waist. That's good. That'll cause you to live longer, have less likely have a heart attack. But you could also be running the risk of a heart attack. So you got to make sure that you have like a cup of beet juice. I would suggest 8 ounces of beet juice. There's your nitric oxide. And some vitamin C and vitamin E before you do your workout. That way you're getting your nitric oxide, which your heart benefits from, its circulation benefits, and it's separating out the red blood cells and keeping the blood thin, doing the same thing that a small aspirin does, but without the bleeding effect, because aspirin can kill you. 24,000 people minimally die each year in the United States from these non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, including aspirin. Yeah, it'll thin your blood, but it raises your homocysteine level by destroying B12, B6, and vitamin C and folic acid, all necessary to keep these very bad inflammatory markers like homocysteine, C-reactive protein, fibrinogen, that can elevate. When they elevate, you can't feel it, you can't see it, you don't know it's elevated. Boom, you have a heart attack or stroke. And that's why thinning the blood naturally, green juices can thin the blood. Having lemon juice thins the blood. Having a vegan diet can thin the blood. And that's what you want. That's the latest on health and healing. We're 17 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break and come right back with a special, in-depth investigative report that challenges Wikipedia as a unbiased source. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall. This is an original in-depth investigative report, a continuation of our series, challenging Wikipedia, challenging the co-founder. He says he's the only founder. We would challenge that statement, Jimmy Wales, and the group of individuals fully embedded and completely protected from any scrutiny and criticism by the mainstream media and by virtually anyone, that they're objective. It is our opinion that they lack objectivity on many issues, including health and alternative medicine. Now, what I'm going to share with you is important because Wikipedia is the fifth most popular website on the internet. It presents itself as as for the people, and that's a people's encyclopedia. But we have not found that to be the case. Now, I'm going to share this with you at this time so you can see what I'm talking about. So here we have Wikipedia, and it's considered a neutral utopian which anyone can edit an article in their area of expertise, adding and correcting facts to enhance the sum total of the world's knowledge. In theory, I would say, good, I support that. That it would be almost a miracle of decentralized wisdom in which anyone, anywhere, can edify themselves for free on any topic. But if something sounds too good to be true, it probably is. And that is where we begin our journey to explore the truth. Wikipedia defines acceptable content by three main pillars: no original research, neutral point of view, and verifiability. These rules are even more strictly enforced for biographies of living persons, given the legal risks of publishing false and defamatory information. Such rules are necessary as a truly democratic content platform always risks sinking towards the lowest common denominator. As a result, Wikipedia's vaunted standards have lent it the sheen of respectability, to the point that most people looking to be quickly informed on a topic for purposes of conversation or even for journalism search no further than the Wikipedia page. Now, these three rules should ensure some degree of quality control, but Wikipedia's rules are not evenly applied across the site. This is nowhere more apparent than in the area of non-conventional, modern, and traditional medical systems, including complementary and alternative medicine, where a group of so-called skeptics has flagged hundreds of pages for editorial scrutiny, rewriting biographies, and debunking non-conventional therapies, then hovering over the pages to prevent any interested parties from altering their content. A concerted effort in the form of Wikipedia training course called Guerrilla Skepticism on Wikipedia has sent hundreds of skeptics to Wikipedia to edit articles on topics they believe to be unscientific, whether or not they have any expertise in the area. Now stop for a moment. I want you just to think about what has been said. So on the one hand, everyone's got the idea that if something's being edited on Wikipedia, at least I would assume for myself that if I'm reading something on a biography of a living person, that the living person had say-so to make sure that the information about themselves is accurate, right? That's just reason and common sense. I'm also assuming that you would not allow someone who has already predisposed themselves by their own biases, their own agenda, whether ideological, political, financial, or just even hate, to be able to go on to someone else's web biography and edit it, putting misinformation in, and then having no ability to correct that misinformation. I would assume that that would never be allowed. By any measure, that is wrong. In any open source, you should have only the best information from people who are qualified in the field. If you don't, then what is the proof of veracity, of honesty and objectivity in what you are reading? We could all be sharing misinformation, and that does not bode well. So the skepticism WikiProject purports to be, quote, dedicated to creating, improving, and monitoring articles related to scientific skepticism, including articles about claims which are contrary to the current body of scientific evidence. The project ensures that these articles are written from a neutral point of view and do not put forward invalid claims as truth, end quote. All right. Now, am I to assume that they, who are anonymous, were not allowed to know who they are? These people who are going to sit in judgment of what is a true scientific claim, that they are scientists in the specific area of the scientific claim. Are they clinicians? Are they board-certified clinicians in the area where a clinical observation, a laboratory finding, an empirical evidence from their own personal practice, or in a study has been performed? Because from my perspective, I would never presume to judge anything or anyone based upon a lack of knowledge and expertise in the area. That would be the height of both arrogance and narcissism from my perspective. So I'm going by an assumption that if you, Wikipedia, and those who are editing something, you do have degrees in the field. You have published original research in the field. You have contributed something that is called mastery of field. For those of us who actually have legitimate PhDs in legitimate sciences, we don't get this degree handed to us arbitrarily or because someone likes us. We have to go through a process called proof of mastery. And proof of mastery means that you must not only show that you know the field you're in, you must contribute something uniquely relevant to it. Otherwise, you're not going to get your doctorate. And that's why some people spend long periods of time, many, many years, trying to show that they deserve their doctorate in their field of expertise, because there's a group of people that are judging you, hopefully objectively. So where is the objectivity of knowing the background, the expertise, the detail of their original input? What have they done to justify judging someone else's work who has done something? I hope that this is not sounding convoluted but is very straightforward. If you're going to judge someone, then what justifies you being the judge? And we see this all the time in America. Someone who's never opened a business, never ran a business, never had to be a person responsible for what it is to be a business, but judging people who run a business. It's like one of the people giving color commentary on television for a football game and pretending possibly to know things they don't unless you're on the field. That's why I much prefer listening to people who have played the game, because they know the game. They know what it's like. So I want to know, by what standards are you insisting that someone prove their own veracity, their own expertise, before you allow them to edit anyone else's work? And no one knows who that is. How lacking in transparency is that? How opaque is that? You realize that you could open yourself up for someone who may work as a troll for a pharmaceutical industry, for a front group, for an astro group, an agent provocateur from some governmental agency who doesn't like what someone's saying. You've just opened that porthole for them to be able to go in there if they chose, and if this happened, and to alter content to discredit someone. And then when the person goes to correct that discreditation, they're prevented from doing so. Well, then how is this truly objective and an open source? So, here we have people saying that our sources are objective and are not biased. And yet the sources that Wikipedia use most often do not follow Wikipedia's guidelines. Where medical claims are concerned, the skeptics have relied heavily upon Quackwatch, a repository of unsourced allegations founded by Stephen Barrett, a former psychiatrist with a grudge against alternative practitioners. Wikipedia emphasizes the need to include independent sources written from a balanced, quote, disinterested viewpoint rather than, quote, viewpoint of people with an axe to grind. That's what they said. Quote, Wikipedia, they don't want people with a viewpoint of people with an axe to grind. Self-promotion and personal financial benefit are also cited as abuses to be avoided through reliance on independent sources. This further disqualifies Barrett, who made his name and income as, quote, an expert witness in lawsuits against alternative practitioners. Despite his own lack of expertise in the field, and has been frequently cited by journalists and authors as the expert, he wasn't. In fact, there was a major attack to its shame by Consumer Reports against chiropractic. And who was the person counseling them? Barrett. And how many times have we seen him used as a source for the New York Times and other sources? Let Wikipedia explain why Quackwatch is not a reliable source. Quote, here's what they say. Anyone can create a personal web page or publish their own book and also claim to be an expert in a certain field. For that reason, self-published media, such as books, patents, newsletters, personal websites, open wikis, personal or group blogs, as distinguished from web blogs, content farms, internet forum postings, and social media postings are largely not acceptable as sources, end quote. Not clear enough? Quote, never use self-published sources as third-party sources about living people, even if the author is an expert, well-known professional researcher, or writer, end quote. Well, there's no way to argue for the inclusion of Barrett's screeds in a neutral, reliable article that does not run afoul of Wikipedia's content policies in multiple ways. This matter has been brought to the attention of Wikipedia administrators repeatedly, yet they refuse to act on it. Why? If Barrett is such a brave truth teller, surely his information is available on other, more reputable sites, right? Show them to me. For an organization that claims to be based on transparency, readers can track article edits in real time and at least theoretically have their concerns heard by the people operating Wikipedia. The site's behavior regarding its skeptic problem is troublingly opaque. If Wikipedia is supposed to be an egalitarian, democratic people's encyclopedia, where are all those voices? We see it as an Orwellian double standard, wherein some editors are more equal than others. Their refusal to follow their own standards is intellectually dishonest, disingenuous, and exists in utter betrayal of their own stated mission. Wikipedia has revealed its bias time and again when these cases are brought to administrators' attention. Founder Jimmy Wales' venom, when confronted with evidence of his editor's bias to disproportionate, is disproportionate to the instigating comments. In response to a 2014 change.org petition with over 8,000 signatures calling for more even-handed coverage of alternative medicinist practitioners, Wells immediately resorted to ad hominem attacks, calling alternative therapies, quote, the work of lunatic charlatans, end quote. I repeat, this is the founder that is not allowed to bring bias into Wikipedia's pages, calling people who use alternative therapies or who support alternative therapies as, quote, lunatic charlatans. And defending Wikipedia's policies, his words use the exact vocabulary, quote, lunatic charlatans the skeptics deploy to denigrate their opponents, and indicating he is more personally invested in the skeptics' mission than Wikipedia's message of editorial neutrality suggests. A New York Times interview includes an offhand reference to homeopaths as, quote, charlatans, end quote. Now, then he immediately insulated himself from criticism by calling that an American Medical Association quote, and describes him editing an entry as a personal favor to a famous friend. Wikipedia editors, for better or worse, follow Wells' lead, half-jokingly referring to him as, quote, benevolent dictator for life, end quote. It's unsurprising that some have remade themselves in their hero's image and see the rules as nothing more than suggestions. And as an aside, Mr. Wells, you referred to AMA. You are aware that I'm one of the people responsible for exposing, in the hardest-hitting article against the AMA in its history, that was published in a major cover story against the AMA, proving with documents that were left with Lisa and myself that the AMA had conspired for more than 25 years to destroy chiropractic, the very same chiropractic that your skeptic editors have criticized as having no value. And they also, the AMA was against all alternative therapies and had been so successful that it was officially known as an unscientific cult. We stopped that. I published four articles, one going clear back, and Consumer Reports, where Ralph Nader and I published articles together in there. Not the same article, but in the same publication. That's how far back we go. And because of all that early legwork and chiropractors getting this information, a lawsuit was offered against the 12 leading medical organizations in the United States, including the AMA, and they lost. And they appealed, they lost again, and they lost again, clear up to the Supreme Court. Therefore, they had to no longer, could no longer, say that chiropractic was unscientific. It had to be acknowledged as real and as legitimate. So I'm just curious that for an organization that was found guilty of violating the Sherman Antitrust rules, laws, and that guilt was upheld at the Supreme Court, I'm assuming that you no longer hold the AMA in the same standard of quality. But I haven't heard from you on this. So the credibility and expertise of Barrett and his Quack Watchers website have been discredited before various U.S. courts over the past three decades, with judges in multiple states ruling that Barrett and his organization, quote, from the actual judges, are biased and unworthy of credibility. Let me repeat that. Are biased and unworthy of credibility. Now, my own on-staff lawyers reviewed the cases and found, wow, they even wrote a letter showing Barrett's was biased. Now, if someone has been shown in a court of law to be biased and unworthy of credibility, we could find that. Why isn't that in Barrett's profile on your website? Why was he allowed to write about a living biography and attack that person? Barrett was forced to admit as much himself in one lawsuit. Quote, the sole purpose of the activities of Barrett and Barrett's are to discredit and cause damage and harm to healthcare practitioners, businesses that make alternative health therapies or products available, and advocates of non-allopathic therapies and health freedom. End quote. For years, Barrett represented himself as a medical expert in the field to the media and in courts, testifying against medical professionals and trashing them on television and in the news. He colluded with fellow Quackwatch watcher Robert Barrett's to use the National Council Against Health Fraud's name as a meal ticket, unbeknownst even to the organization's board, appearing and collecting fees as an expert witness on over 40 cases. The King Bio case, in which Barrett lost a suit against a homeopathic manufacturer, then lost again on appeal and was forced to pay the defendant's court costs, confirmed it in judgment that Barrett and Barrett's were motivated by profit in their service, quote, as expert witnesses. It was determined that Barrett, winning the case for the national, the NCAHF, would enrich the fund that paid its fees. This would also incentivize future suits. Yet he admitted in another case that Barrett and his partner, Robert Barrett's, lack, quote, expertise, any expertise in the fields that they vocally criticize and attack. So let's just stop for a moment and think about this. Here you have one person that the American media and the FDA is using as their experts to weed out health fraud. And you are allowing this person to attack and to libel individuals on your site. And yet it's been proven, quote, that Barrett has no expertise in the fields that they vocally criticize and attack. So he's able to attack people who actually have credentials in their field without credentials and expertise in the field. How do you do that? How can you even call yourself a legitimate site when you allow this to happen? Now that I'm speaking truth to your power, this might get your attention because of all the efforts that we have made to bring the bias and the libel to the attention of everyone we could find in your organization, nothing but a closed door. So what we have is we have people who, like Barrett, who has not had a license to practice medicine since 1993 and never held a full-time medical position that we can determine, having failed his board certification, that's correct, failed his board certification exam in psychiatry. He has even admitted his ignorance of the subjects he writes about on his website, claiming that, quote, a lot of things don't need to be tested because they simply don't make any sense, end quote. Such a view of the universe is hardly befitting a medical professional. Nevertheless, his name pops up hundreds of times in major publications when a lazy writer needs an expert on quacks and doesn't want to do the legwork to find a real medical expert. Wikipedia has done the public a great disservice by casting Barrett and his minions as authorities on health and healing while allowing them to smear legitimate practitioners as quacks and charlatans. The media outlets who use Barrett as an authority on medicine are complicit in this fraud, since the most rudimentary attempts at fact-checking would quickly reveal him to be unqualified as an expert on the subject of non-conventional health systems and treatments. If you doubt me on this, then why don't you speak to the board-certified medical doctors who use homeopathy, have treated thousands of patients successfully, have read the scientific literature, have the peer-reviewed journals to support what they're doing, and they're considered not an expert and a person that's never used homeopathy, that's never treated a patient with homeopathy, that hasn't read the literature supporting homeopathy, then criticizes the doctor and the homeopath, and then does it for every other part of alternative medicine, Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, herbal medicine, energy medicine, alternative and complementary medicine. What standards do you have in that organization? The public is now seeing the truth, Jimmy Wales. The media, shame on the media, shame on the New York Times, shame on Consumer Reports, shame on anyone that does not do their own homework. We have. And we have done a lot. Plus, we have a lot of whistleblowers. You'll be hearing about their stories on upcoming weeks. This is just the beginning. After 9 articles, we have about 40 more coming. So speculation has swirled for decades about who funds Barrett and his group. On one occasion, he claimed only $54,000 in income over 2 years. All right? Yet he has been on the hook for almost $500,000 in attorney's fees via slapback proceedings and has often had more than one suit in the courts. He certainly has been involved with the AMA since the beginning of his quack-busting career. His anti-quack group was born in 1977 through the merger of the California Committee Against Health Fraud and the Lehigh Valley Committee Against Health Fraud, then led by Barrett. Both regional groups had split off 3 years earlier from the Coordinating Conference on Health Information, a subgroup of the AMA's Committee on Quackery, which infamously mounted a full-scale assault, as I mentioned earlier, on chiropractic. Barrett is also a board member of the American Council on Science and Health. And I debated on NBC Network, one of their leaders, and on the issue of sugar, showing how dangerous sugar was. And this is 30 years ago, and they were supporting of it. All you have to do is look at who supports them, who pays the bills. And many have said that, quote, it's a pro-science front group for pharmaceutical and chemical companies whose major donors include Bristol-Myers Squibb, Syngenta, and Bayer, and has been since 1978. So Barrett's ties to the medical establishment are very real. Barrett's Wikipedia biography makes no mention of his funding, his failure to pass the board certification exam, or any of the major lawsuits he's lost. His page is squeaky clean and guarded by a retinue of skeptic editors who pounce on any untoward truths introduced into the text. The, quote, consumer information, end quote, section reads like a promotional piece, only mentioning any criticism of his work in passing as if it comes from a single journalist instead of numerous qualified professionals. In the rare case that an editor does bring forward a matter of controversy, it is treated with the kid gloves typically used for biographies of living persons, requiring a much higher standard of proof than the smears on the profiles of Barrett's victims, and then discarded anyway. So if Wikipedia claims to be an impartial platform protected by Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, it cannot editorialize or unevenly enforce its terms of service. Let me repeat that. My team of lawyers, and these are scholar lawyers, are saying to Wikipedia, you have been acting as if you are impervious to litigation, that there's no way anybody can breach that wall and get to you. I wouldn't be so self-assured. I wouldn't. But that will be something we will go into greater detail on an upcoming program. And Barrett's page is scrubbed of any mention of his myriad legal travails, to say nothing of the hundreds of instances in which he and his website have been profoundly, egregiously wrong about medicine. If Wikipedia is favoring certain groups in the enforcement of its own rules, it is no longer merely a platform. It is involved in the fabrication of misleading content and can be subject to the laws of libel and defamation. In case you didn't hear what I said, let me repeat that, because there's a lot of people around this world who've been libeled by Wikipedia. I will repeat this. If you're no longer following your own rules as a platform, and if you're involved with premeditation in the fabrication of misleading content, then you can be subject to the laws of libel and defamation. So if Barrett is used as the primary source of information for multiple articles in Wikipedia's medical section, we must assume he is using peer-reviewed scientific literature to support his positions. Well, we decided to review everything Stephen Barrett has ever written. Every book, every article. When we do research on your friend, we do research. And ours is scholarly, not slipshod, and not biased. We're looking for the truth. And that is what we did. We took decades-long quack-watching career, and we found that not only rare are his assertions being supported by peer-reviewed studies, but in fact they are contradicted frequently by the scientific literature, the best scientific literature. Now, I would assume if Wikipedia has an editor and they want to see who is right on the subject of sugar, we're saying sugar is dangerous in the amounts Americans are consuming. And if he's saying that's not true, what does the actual literature show? Because that's where we should be enforcing this this ideal of what is true and what is not, what should be put on and what should be taken off a site. And as a result, we found that Barrett's entire career is rife with misstatements of fact. Why has the media not challenged him or called him out on his unscientific conclusions, instead calling upon him for expert medical commentary without the rigors of fact-checking? Why did the courts permit him to return again and again as the purveyor of expert testimony, despite the numerous instances where his writing directly contradicts the scientific literature? Barrett and the larger skeptic community claim to be the standard bearers of something called science-based medicine, yet their opinions, based on no clinical experience in their field, in the fields that they are challenging, contradict many thousands of scientific studies as published in peer-reviewed literature. Let me just share a few to give you an example, and this is just a few. We have thousands where Barrett is utterly wrong in a sampling of the scientific studies supporting the opposing view. Barrett scoffs at organic foods, putting scare quotes around the phrase in his writings and dismissing the notion of pesticide-free farming as a pipe dream, while claiming to be, quote, support the elimination of pesticides from agriculture if it can be done without serious damage to food production, end quote. He dug up a retired food technologist to claim that apples, apricots, peaches, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, and numerous other foods would surely, quote, disappear from the fresh market, produce market, end quote, should farmers attempt to grow them without pesticides. Quote, his expert, also a board member of his anti-quackery group, painted a lurid picture of a world without pesticides, describing heads of broccoli, quote, with gray, cheesy core of aphids at least a half inch in diameter at the top, end quote, and Brussels sprouts similarly besieged. Ronnie Cummins of the Organic Growing Association responds, quote, indigenous and traditional farmers produce food for 8,000 years organically without the use of toxic chemicals, GMOs, and animal drugs. Millions of farmers, ranchers, and gardeners are still doing the same. Propaganda organizations like the Skeptics Network like to cite bogus scientific experts that we're all going to starve without industrial agriculture, factory farms, and putting poisons in our body and crops. This, of course, is a lie. For our health and the health of the planet, we should buy organic and regenerative foods. And that's what he says. Barrett's opposition to organic farming is especially disingenuous in light of the recent $289 million judgment against Monsanto, in which a San Francisco jury found the company liable for groundskeepers Dwayne Johnson's non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Johnson sprayed Monsanto's Roundup and Ranger One as part of his job while employed at San Francisco area schools. And the jury found that Monsanto had failed to warn users of the carcinogenic risk inherent in its products. Dozens of scientific studies have demonstrated the harms of glyphosate alone, to say nothing of other pesticides and chemicals used in farming. The Environmental Working Group studied 45 products made with, quote, conventionally grown oats, end quote, and found all but two contain glyphosate. 31 of these contain levels higher than what the Environmental Working Group deemed safe for children. With glyphosate so ubiquitous in our food, organic farming is more important than ever. when a federal court ruled in 1976 that the AMA and its Quack Dog Group and Quack Watch's predecessor, the Coordinating Conference on Health Organization, or the CCHI, Quack Watch's predecessor, must cease and desist from their attacks on chiropractic, Barrett didn't get the message. Instead, when the CCHI splintered into regional organizations, he took the material they had collected and used it as the basis of his own operations in Pennsylvania's Lehigh Valley. Barrett's site claims, quote, that chiropractic cultism is well entrenched, that the profession should be viewed as a sociological problem, end quote. This, when 2017 saw 72,000 Americans die of drug overdoses, many of whom began taking drugs to deal with back and nerve pain, we have thoroughly debunked the Quack Watch position on chiropractic. Barrett has a special place in his heart for homeopathy. With an entire site, homeowatch.org, devoted to debunking the practice. He claims, quote, that if a product doesn't work, it is not safe to use it instead of real medicine, end quote, yet refused to test homeopathic products to evaluate their effectiveness. Had he done so, he would have found surprising results. Hundreds of scientific studies have demonstrated the benefits of homeopathy, and we've discussed them in previous articles. Barrett dismisses traditional Chinese medicine out of hand, calling it, quote, worthless, partly because practitioners sometimes disagree with one another. Clearly, he is unfamiliar with the practice of Western medicine as well. Quote, even if they could agree, the traditional Chinese medicine theories are so nebulous that no amount of scientific study will enable traditional Chinese medicine to offer rational care, end quote. Barrett opines, claiming, quote, traditional Chinese medicine theory and practice are not based upon the body of knowledge related to health, disease, and health care that has been widely accepted by the scientific community, end quote. Well, perhaps he believes the entirety of scientific knowledge has always been known and agreed upon by the majority of scientists. Hundreds of scientific studies have found benefits, real benefits, published in peer-reviewed journals of traditional Chinese medicine, which have covered, we've covered that in great degree. He also calls acupuncture, quote, a pseudoscience, despite hundreds of scientific studies indicating its effectiveness in treating a wide range of conditions. He believes, quote, its theory and practice are based upon primitive and fanciful concepts of health and disease that bear no relationship to present scientific knowledge, and that, quote, research during the past 20 years has not demonstrated that acupuncture is effective against any disease, end quote. Excuse me? You're kidding. We found a phenomenal amount of peer-reviewed literature on the government's own PubMed website, and instead of assuming that Barrett knew what it said, he would once again be surprised. We discussed the benefits, which are multiple, from qualified scientific journals. Ayurvedic medicine gets the Quack Watch treatment also. He's against it. In fact, virtually everything that he's against, we found support for. And in the peer-reviewed literature, even the idea of vitamin and mineral supplementation comes up for mockery. Bear particularly has it in for vitamin C, ridiculing two-time Nobel Prize winner Linus Pauling's research indicating that megadoses of vitamin C can cure certain cancers and heal other conditions. Pauling, quote, impact on the health marketplace has anything but laudable. Barrett sniffs, blaming the scientific scientists for, quote, widespread misbelief that high doses of vitamin C are effective in treating colds and other illnesses, along with the notion that daily that some people require nutrients in amounts much larger than recommended daily allowance. Quote, no responsible medical or nutritional scientists share these views. Really? Do you have any idea how many thousands of studies we found in peer-reviewed literature on vitamin C and its benefit on PubMed? And also, Linus Pauling was a friend. A lot of times he came to the city, he would come to the Institute of Applied Biology. In fact, it was based upon many of our conversations that we began to use at the Tri-State Healing Center very high dose amount of vitamin C and was able to reverse HIV and AIDS-related conditions, bringing people back to a state of health and sustaining it. Dr. Robert Cathcart, the leading physician in California treating persons with AIDS-defining illnesses with high doses, 50,000 milligrams of vitamin C, didn't lose a patient doing that. So here's a man who's the only American to win two unshared Nobel Prizes, two, and he's given no respect by this man. And by the way, how many Nobel Prizes have you won? How many research papers have you published of original research like Linus Pauling? How many times have you been cited by the other scientists in your field because of your expertise? Linus Pauling's one of the most cited scientists in American history. So Barrett refuses to believe in any of the hundreds of studies purporting the use of vitamin D, and so it goes. So then we come down to the end. And the end is that here we have a person that is used as the basis for an entire biography. He put it up there. Barrett did. And every effort to correct it, to change it, was rebuffed. And the skeptics side with Barrett. Jimmy Wells sides with Barrett. All the editors of Wikipedia who were contacted side with Barrett. So Wikipedia, it is my personal opinion you've gone to the dark side. People should not trust what you say on the topics where these individuals have power, absolute and total power. And what is it called when a person has absolute and total power over the truth? We want to thank Helen Beniski for her contributions, Richard Gale. A lot of people did a lot of homework on this topic. And this wasn't just started a week or a month ago. We've been working on this for a long time. That's why we are now prepared to continue with our in-depth original investigative reporting on Wikipedia. And the lightest part of this has just begun. As of next week, we will go much further in-depth and we'll be calling out people and what they have said on Wikipedia. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day.
Though you may not drive